Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Winnell, and I'm your host. On today's program, what has become now the annual year-end wrap-up. We're going to call, you know, we can no longer call it the second or third annual. We've been on it too long. It's just the annual year-end wrap-up with my pal, John Anderson. We'll talk about what's been going on in the world of media, especially with some props to the grassroots. You do want to stay tuned. Well, John, we are recording this with about 11 days before the end of the year. So I think we should put a disclaimer here that something big could go down. The media world could blow up in the next 11 days.
And we're not stupid enough to have missed it.
Yeah, we didn't miss it. We're just 11 days ahead of the end of the year. But usually in the media world, especially if you're talking about anything that goes on in Washington, once you're past the beginning of December, not much goes on.
This is true.
And so, John, your website is DIYmedia.net. You keep tabs, especially on pirate radio and underground media, but you also maintain a great archive of truthful translations.
Yes, 460-something and counting, I think, now.
When was the last update?
Last month, sometime in late November, and there's at least one coming sometime in early January. I'm skipping a month, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been doing about monthly.
All right. And in December's a pretty packed month.
Yeah, slow month. People are busy with other stuff.
And yours is probably probably the largest archive on the web of this particular type of material.
I don't know of any other archive on the web that has this particular archive of material.
Right. And so truthful translations are audio collage, broadly speaking.
Yes.
So mashups, but not, you're less oriented towards just the strict sort of like Jay-Z mixed with the Beatles, like a Grey album, but more towards things which are political or make statements.
Yeah, usually the main content in all of these collages are politicians speaking things. And they're mixed in with people, you know, doing other music, crazy music things like Jay-Z. But it's pretty much the actual politicians that we all know and love turn into quasi-rappers.
And maybe giving a good injection of truth serum.
Yes, the things that they would like to say or are actually trying to say between the lines of the things they actually say.
And I'll say that of the ones that I've seen this year, the best were the new ones with George Bush doing Imagine.
Yes, Wax Audio. There's actually two versions of that that exist online. One done by a person named RX out of New York, who is currently not doing anything right now because he lost access to the work that he was using computers at his job, and he lost his job. And the other one is a guy by the name of Tom Campagnoni, who goes by the name Wax Audio, who's based out of Australia. They both came up with different versions of Imagine. RX's version actually combines Imagine with Take a Walk on the Wild Side.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
And the other one is pretty much straightforward. So they're both big hits.
Check that out at DIYmedia.net. And, of course, you're also the, I think you're the crossing guard at the intersection of media and democracy.
I'm the guy with the orange belt.
Over there at Media Minutes for the Free Press and Empire. I guess we should mention that the National Conference on Media Reform is coming up in just a few weeks now.
This is true. January 12th through the 14th in Memphis. Supposedly 3,000 or more people are going to show up, including a nice A-list of progressive celebrities such as Gina Davis, Jesse Jackson, Jane Fonda.
Gina Davis is a new one on me.
Yeah, a new one on me too.
Is it because her show got canceled?
I have no idea. And Amy Goodman, of course, and Phil Donahue, and it's just going to be all that fun stuff, and you can rub shoulders with them and talk about media policy and media activism issues and how to translate all of the arcane things that happen in Washington, D.C. into grassroots activism that you can actually push forward at home.
And Boots Riley will be in the house.
Boots Riley from The Coup, also confirmed to be in the house. Don't know if he's going to be playing mouth harp with Jonathan Adelstein, FCC commissioner, who's got quite a set of chops on him, but We'll remain to see that. By the way, there will be free daily special editions of Media Minutes during the National Conference for Media Reform, and we hope to encode everything and get it up on the web in near real time, and some of the more major highlight-style events may be streamed live. So there's your plug.
And that'll be at freepress.net?
/conference.
/conference. You know, it, really the show the I don't know what else to call it, that went with the first conference of media reform up in Madison back in, was that 2003?
Three. Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard one to top because you had Billy Bragg working with Boots Riley and seamlessly. Amazing, amazing show. Two artists, you know, coming in from not even really the left, but a radical, more anarchist approach.
Yeah, with Tom Morello and Lester Chambers.
Yeah, I mean, coming
and
together.
And an FCC commissioner.
Putting
you know?
On a great show and,
it's
you know, running
crazy
through
quintet.
Their own songs, classics, you know, and, you know, like 10,000 Ways to Kill a CEO.
Yeah, oh yeah.
A coup classic. It's really hard to
Wear
top
clean
that show.
Drawers, yeah. I was dancing in the aisles like a fool.
You were.
I was a foolish monkey dancing in the aisles in 2003, and I don't think there's any way they're going to top that. But, you know, who knows?
Maybe
it's
they
Memphis.
Can.
You know, it's got Graceland.
Maybe Gina Davis can rap. I want to see Phil Donahue rap.
That would be really nice.
All right, so let's get on to the business at hand here. But, you know, we want to give people a sense of what's coming up. And I think I'm going to be there, and we're going to try and do a live broadcast. Hoping maybe not to even do it over the phone. Maybe we'll do it over the net.
Ooh.
So for those of you who are listening, not at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, where this show originates, a little less exciting for you. But for folks here in Champaign-Urbana, you may get a live feed from Memphis. We'll see if we can work on that high technology now that we have decent.
Free Press is supposedly going to have a media room available to media makers. We can possibly hold them to it. We'll find out.
Oh, yes. I intend to hold them to it. That would be really cool. But I'll bring some gear with me just in case. We can work that out. Figure it all out coming forward here in January in Memphis. It seems like May in Memphis would be nicer, but
I don't know how they pick them. I think it's once every 15 months is how they're doing these conferences. Uh-huh. It was November. Or maybe 18 months. First one was in November of 2003. The second one was in May of 2005. And now we're in January of 2007. So year and a half intervals.
So that should be all right. But let's take a look at this year. Because, I mean, one of the things I remember going back to about this point in 2005, people were making a big deal about the fact that digital radios were now available, HD radios, mm-hmm. as they're called. And then one of the first ones being this one model by Boston Acoustics. Now a bunch more have come on the market. That finally, you could buy a nice radio that would pick up digital signals. And a year later, they don't really seem to have taken off too much. It doesn't seem to be on the top of anyone's gift guides this year, the best gifts of 2006.
Yeah, well, the production dates for a lot of the different models kept slipping throughout the year, and things were actually pushed back to the late November, early December. And even some places that are selling radios now are basically selling certificates for you to pick radios up when their inventory is coming in January. I do know
even
that,
now, yeah, a year later.
I do know that they're offering some rebate incentives to try to pick up the holiday, you know, gift giving uptake, but I don't know exactly how well penetration is going, and there still isn't any real alluring content that it would seem digital radio stations could use to try to let people know, hey, get this radio and get these new features. A lot of stations that are programming in digital radio are running syndicated feeds from other places, kind of like a lot of their main programming is. Some of them are running variants of their main format, which is slightly different, but with a lot of playlist overlap, and lots of them, especially public radio stations, it sounds like, are essentially swapping the programs from the main program to the secondary program. So, for example, say there's a station in somewhere that during half the day runs jazz and the other half the day runs classical. They use their second channel to run classical when they're running jazz on their front, and then when classical starts being played on the front channel, they move the jazz to the back channel. That's not an increase in program diversity or access by any metric that I can think of that's logical, but that's really the compelling reasons, if there are any, for a consumer to go out and get a new digital radio. And I don't think that those reasons are compelling enough to actually spur buyer involvement at this point. Plus the price point, as you mentioned, it's still at its low end around $100.
That's more than that.
No, they're coming down now.
Coming
like,
down
you know,
now?
With these rebates and stuff, you can get them for like $99, $89, but they're still tabletop radios. There aren't Walkmans that do this kind of thing. Car radios are still in production. Those are actually slipping back further than household
and that's,
available
and that's
radios.
Where most people listen to the radio.
Right. And so, you know, it's not something that where the places where people are listening, they actually have a chance to substantively listen to it in the first place. But we'll see. They're still rolling out the signals, so we'll see.
And the big selling point, supposedly, to HD radio, as it's called, also known as IBOC, to more radio insiders, is that you get several more signals embedded in your one audio stream. So on one frequency, you might have two or three stations worth of material going on. And a supposed better quality than standard analog FM. But there's a price to be paid. Right. And we've talked about this before. Right. Maybe you can give a quick summary of that.
Well, the biggest price to be paid is the potential for increased interference. In order to fit digital signals onto an analog signal, you essentially have to put them on saddlebag style. So where the bandwidth that's taken up by, say, an FM channel is already filled with analog programming, what do you do when you want to add a digital signal to that? And what stations have done and what they've convinced the FCC to allow them to do is to essentially fatten their signals. In the case of FM, that means make them twice as fat as they are today. In the case of AM, it's three times as fat as they are today. And in that extra space on the sides, they're running these low-power digital information streams. These digital information streams can cause significant interference to stations based on channels that are short-spaced from the original channel. So, like, for example, if you're broadcasting an HD radio signal on 90.1 and there's a station nearby that you could normally pick up at 90.3 or, say, 90.5, you might have a little additional trouble picking that signal up now because 90.1 has doubled the size of its footprint on the radio dial. And as more stations pick up digital radio, more signals are going to be fattened in such a fashion. And especially in larger markets, as the technology proliferates, we're going to see whether or not this is really going to have an impact on smaller, independent, community, lower power radio stations.
And with regard to the audio quality question, it's definitely an issue of bandwidth is bandwidth.
Right.
So if you want to use it for four channels, that means each of those channels can be reduced fidelity compared to using it for one channel.
Right. There is a good technology reporter who has started a blog of his own on digital radio. He's looking at it primarily from a consumer's perspective. His name's Glenn Fleischman.
Mm-hmm.
He's written a lot on Wi-Fi before, but he's now taken up digital radio as his new hobby. And he is very enthusiastic about the way that digital radio stations can sound. He's listened to HD radio technology programming, specifically at a public radio station in Seattle, and he thinks that it sounds, you know, like the cat's meow. It's just great. That's good. It shows that the encoding technology that Ibiquity, the company that makes HD radio, is using is efficient and produces a somewhat quality product. But a lot of it also has to do with the fact that the chief engineer at the public radio station in Seattle is an audiophile and worked very closely with Ibiquity to optimize the signal to sound as best as it possibly could. Not all stations even have chief engineers to put this technology in and calibrate it.
Not anymore.
It'll be interesting to see exactly how many stations just throw digital signals on the air and don't do any tweaking to make them sound like they possibly should.
Well, I mean, in most metropolitan areas, as you scan across the dial, you will hear some stations that sound very good.
Right.
And you will hear stations that also sound very poor.
Right.
With no dynamics and like all the mid-range, the vocal range cranked up and with, you know, it's tinny, it's difficult to listen to because it's a bit of an art tweaking an audio signal so that it really is properly encoded just on regular FM. And it's also an art to tweak an audio signal so that it works properly with digital encoding, because digital encoding has its own weaknesses and has its own strengths and reproduces some frequencies better than others, at least when you're talking about an encoding schema like Ibiquity, which is like MP3.
One of the interesting things about that whole issue is the fact that everything that goes through the radio station's air chain, from the CD player into the mixer, then into whatever audio processing gear it has, and then into whatever the system is that encodes the signal, in this case like Ibiquity's digital encoding engine, goes through specific steps. For example, a CD is digital information that is primarily in most stations converted into an analog signal, which is sent through analog equipment to a processor, which reprocesses it digitally and then feeds it back into Ibiquity's system to be encoded again. The process of multiple encoding in all these steps is called transcoding. And the more transcoding you have between formats, the worse your audio quality is going to sound. One of the weaknesses of Ibiquity's HD radio technology is it does not handle transcoding from MP3 format very well. And since MP3 has become, in many effects, one of the standards used for broadcasting digital audio over the radio, there may be some problems down the road, especially as more stations digitize their programming libraries.
And it may be why the public station sounds better, because the standard for public radio is MPEG-2,
right,
which has a higher data rate, mm-hmm. meaning that you get fewer hours of audio per megabyte, but as a result, there's less data loss, and when you do that multiple transcode, it's called stacking codecs,
right.
You tend not to get the same kind of shimmery, underwater,
right.
tinny kind of effect. And so you may have listened to a podcast or something where maybe the podcast producer was using MP3s for the music they were producing, and then re-encoded it to MP3 maybe multiple times, and you'll get this shimmery, underwater, gurgling effect, especially if you're listening over headphones where it's much closer to your ears.
Right, and this is a hidden cost that radio stations have to consider if they're going to implement digital radio, is whether or not they're going to fix their air chains in such a way as to send the best, highest quality, most uncompressed digital audio signal they can from the source, the studio, all the way to the transmitter. And there are so many steps along the way where stations will have to either think, compromise, swap out, buy new equipment, upgrade, whatever to do, that the cost of installing an HD radio system is a lot more than just a transmitter and any work that has to be done to your antenna. There's a lot more cost to it than that.
And I'd argue in the last 10 years, we've seen a gross decrease in the quality of radio and
right.
sound with the warehousing of stations by Clear Channel and its similar competitors, who go through, buy up 6 stations in a city and put them all into one building, chintz out on the equipment, automate them as cheaply as they can, and literally warehouse the existing equipment, and often auctioning it off or selling it off, to try and make something back on the deal.
Right.
Audio quality, similar to how programming quality have not been the object of modern commercial radio in the last 10 years.
No, and that brings up another interesting point to the digital radio conundrum. Is one of the main investors in Ibiquity, the company that holds the proprietary technology that is HD radio, is Clear Channel. And as we've heard in the last few months, Clear Channel has decided to sell itself off to private investment companies. And as a part of that deal, it's divesting itself of more than one third of all the radio stations that it owns. It's going to primarily focus on keeping the stations that it has in the top 100 radio markets. Clear Channel, because it has been such a heavy investor in HD radio, has been working very hard to roll out that technology on its stations. What will happen to the 447 stations that it's selling? Will they be upgraded before they are sold? Will they just be left out in the cold to pay for it themselves? Will the new owners be able to take the cost on? Will they have the capital reserves like Clear Channel does to actually invest in this new technology? The fact that it's divesting like it is an interesting financial move for stock price purposes, but it also, to me, heralds a big question as to how far digital radio in general is going to proliferate throughout America.
And 400 stations, while it's, again, just a third for Clear Channel, is a lot of stations.
Yeah.
Just strictly speaking, that's a major shift. It's bigger than many large owners of mm-hmm. radio stations. It's a major shift in the radio market. And we don't really know what effect it's going to have on broadcasting in general, but how well they'll be able to sell those, to whom, and what, you know, whether that will mark a change for the better for those local markets, or whether it'll be sold, you know, to the lowest bidder in some way who cheapens it even more
right.
than Clear Channel already has.
Right.
And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Bobby Spinell. I'm your host. Today, my guest is John Anderson. For our annual year-end wrap-up, we're really looking at radio through 2006, and of course, looking a bit forward to 2007. We hear so much about the internet, we hear so much about YouTube, we hear a lot about other media, and yet radio still is plugging along, even with some changes that are supposed to happen, may not happen, like digital radio. And that's what we're talking about today. And of course, check out the Media Geek website at MediaGeek.net. You can download the program or listen live online. Not really live, but listen right there in your browser at radio.MediaGeek.net. If you got any comments, send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net. And John's website is DIYMedia.net. And so one of the interesting things about digital radio, HD radio, as it's called, the brand name now, is that it's still kind of an experimental technology.
To a degree. I mean, it took broadcasters approximately 10 years before they actually had a workable way that they could fit a digital and analog signal on the same chunk of spectrum, kind of. And they rushed that through an industry board approval process, who basically judged it to be better than analog. It wasn't the best technology that the industry could adopt. All it had to be was better than analog. And they duly judged it better than analog, and Ubiquiti started rushing it into production, and now we are seeing stations proliferate it. But there are still problems with the technology that Ubiquiti is aware of. Some of them have to deal with interference. A lot of them have to deal with audio quality, especially on the AM side of the equation. And yeah, in that case, the technology is still very experimental. In fact, the FCC, currently as it stands, does not give out blanket approval for a station just to convert to digital radio. You have to send them essentially a letter of intent saying, by this date, at this time, we'll be turning on a digital signal. And if you're an AM station, you have to certify that you'll be turning that signal off at night, because the FCC still hasn't approved the use of digital broadcasting at night due to interference concerns.
And that's on the AM dial. It's because you things bounce off the ionosphere,
right,
and you get way larger distances.
Right.
Which would, you know, result in stations really interfering with one
another. So stations are putting these signals on the air, but they are doing so with conditional approval of the FCC, who may or may not change its mind, but is surely not inclined to look at any alternative technologies or reconsider the path they've already started.
And I think you can sort of compare and contrast this digital radio with the path that HD digital television has taken. I mean, in there are many people who critique the technology chosen by the FCC, but in fact, it's a unified system. It's been chosen, and in fact, we have a transition date now.
Right.
2009
right.
is when the analog signals get turned off. We go to an exclusively digital system, and we're seeing in the last, especially this year, people actually buying digital capable televisions now, and that. You know, if you read all the industry press, they say that's the big gift of 2006. It's the big Christmas thing of the year, going by widescreen digital capable televisions, which are far more expensive.
Very much so.
than a yeah. $99 or $199 or $299 radio. And I wonder, you know, I have to admit, I've not yet heard HD radio. I'm not even sure if anyone's broadcasting HD radio in the Champaign-Urbana area,
yeah,
be able to figure
least,
that out.
At least one station is that I know of.
One station
mm-hmm.
is
could be
broadcasting.
More.
Which station is? Do you know?
94.5.
So, okay. So that's WLRW-FM. They're owned by Saga Communications out
right.
of Michigan. They're specialized in small and mid-sized markets like Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. So I'd be interested to hear it. Of course, to hear just one station.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't very enticing. There's not a lot of other signals that come on in FM. There are some AM stations in Chicago broadcasting on IBOC. I think WLS is on is using during the daytime, and that comes in very clearly here in Champaign-Urbana.
Right.
So it'd be one station, and you could check it out. But yeah, to get one or two extra stations.
No one sent me an evaluation radio
yeah.
that I can check out. You know, I don't have those kind of connections. So I'm like the rest of most of the radio listening America, in that I'm going to wait for the price point to come down to an affordable level, which is pretty far away still.
Well, and it's interesting as well, in that the FCC is taking a much more laissez-faire approach to digital radio than with digital television. Part of that due to the fact that with digital television, there needed to be the full reallocation of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And the broadcasters in FM were very cautious to build it on top of the existing set of bandwidth. Even though the television broadcasters have many times tried to make a gambit to keep their old bandwidth, their old analog bandwidth, and their new digital bandwidth. So far, they failed, luckily. But in Congress has not been involved at all since the 2009 digital TV transition date was mandated by Congress eventually, not by the FCC.
Right.
So, I mean, you have these, you know, it seems as though we may very well have a digital television penetration way before we have anything remotely equal in the radio dial.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the people who follow consumer electronics investments and investments in the broadcast industry in general, like Morgan Stanley, and I think Deutsche Bank is another one of them, they have telecom investment analysts who look at things like market penetration of new technologies and make, you know, prognoses of what you can expect. And the most optimistic prognosis of possibly seeing half of the United States being able to listen to a digital radio signal is by 2009 to 2011. Most of the consensus in the investment analyst industry seems to be closer to the middle of that decade, 2015, 2017. And that's before half of the country has penetration. That's not like 80% or everybody can possibly have access. That's half. And one of the reasons why there wasn't a cutoff date set outside of the one that you mentioned already, Paul, in that you can't have, you don't need to reallocate spectrum for digital radio like you do with digital television, is the fact that the industry didn't want it. In one of the early FCC rulemakings, one of the early proprietors of this technology, USA Digital Radio, suggested kind of informally a 12-year cutoff date. So as soon as the FCC says this is the technology, we'll roll with it. We'll have 12 years to do it. But then in later comments, I think partially as they saw how the real-world deployment of the technology was shaping out in the early years, they took that back and they said, we don't want a cutoff date for analog. We want to let stations do that at their discretion based upon their own individual estimates of market penetration in the areas they serve. I don't know what that means. Does that mean like stations that own multiple clusters in, you know, a cluster in a single market will program heavily on one station, get everybody to listen to that one station, and then say, oh, all you other listeners, we're holding you ransom because as of this date, we're turning over and you better get radios or lose them? I don't know exactly where that condition for a decision is made. I don't know. And it's not something that can be made at a local decision level anymore because there aren't people running radio stations like they used to. They're programmed out of regional headquarters. All of these are very interesting questions, and a lot of them do not point to a very quick diffusion of digital radio technology into the marketplace.
And without the diffusion, I mean, is it the slow death march of radio? I mean, that's the big question, given now that you can buy portable satellite receivers, you can buy, you know, same radios that do, you know, the table radios, you can get satellite versions of them. It's easy to get car radios, and then more and more people are listening to internet radio. You listen to podcasts. And given that most local radio stations don't really do any level of local service to speak of.
A radio is nowhere near dead, but if we're having this conversation 10 years from now, I think it might be a little bit more urgent, yes. You know, about what the future of radio may actually very well be. And at this point, it's anybody's guess, but there is a statistical possibility that it won't be radio as we know it.
And we'll leave it at that. John, thanks for coming in for another end of the year wrap up here, 2006. We'll definitely be doing this in 2007, but I'm sure you'll be back to get me up to date with things like what's going on with iBock radio, with digital radio, and of course the pirate radio scene, which also isn't going anywhere. And people can listen to our show from a couple weeks back to get that update. Thanks for tuning in. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can be downloaded at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. The program is also heard on 10 other community stations around North America. They are Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, and Free Radio San Diego. Media Geek is free to air on your local community station as well. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also the address where you can send your comments about the program. Once again, that's Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.